Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman. And this morning we have with us Christina Cambo from Bolin Law Group in Orlando. Good morning, Christina. Nice to have you.
Good morning, Jonathan. Thank you for having me.
Good deal. So it's still morning and we're drinking coffee latte with a lawyer. What's your morning beverage of choice?
Oh, I go for a cortadito every day, which is a shot of espresso with a splash of milk.
Excellent. Wait, could you say that again slowly?
Cortadito.
Cortadito. What does that mean?
It means like a cortado is a shot of espresso with a lot of milk. And if you make it a cortadito, it's just a shot of espresso with a splash of milk.
With a small cortadito, small. Yeah. So, and you make that at home?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. You're not getting that at Starbucks, I would imagine.
I could, but they would look at me kind of funny, I guess.
Yeah. Are there any shops in Orlando or where you live where you can get that kind of coffee?
Yeah, so any Cuban restaurant, essentially, like any little, you know, Cuban sandwiches to go or, you know, just any little shop like that. A lot of Hispanic restaurants will sell that.
Okay, excellent. Good stuff. I'll try that the next time I'm there. I may be up there next week.
All right.
So I'll have to try one. Okay. So tell everybody the type of law that you practice, what you do.
Sure. So I'm a first party property attorney. So I handle everything from pre-suit investigation, special investigative unit, you know, where we're suspecting fraud or some sort of concealment. I help carriers with their SIU stuff, as well as responding to civil remedy notices, pre-suit notice of intent. And then, of course, the litigation aspect of it as well. As soon as the lawsuit is filed, you know, we'll defend the case all the way through trial.
Okay, so let's drill down a little bit further on that. Give me real more details on what kind of cases.
Sure. So first party property involves a dispute with primarily a homeowner whenever the homeowner has a dispute with their insurance company. Okay. So if a homeowner has a, you know, windstorm, water, mold, theft, et cetera, loss involving their property, and they report to the carrier and they reach a decision, you know, they're not able to reach an agreement on the claim and a lawsuit is filed, then I'm retained, my firm is retained to represent the insurance company in that dispute.
I see. Okay. And is that your sole focus in your practice?
Yes. That's pretty much exclusively what I do.
Ah, excellent. A lot of people just focus on that area. It seems like a niche.
It is a niche. Yeah, it's a niche area, but it's also one, you know, considering Florida's, you know, situation and being prone to big catastrophic weather events. It is a huge practice area, and it's one that's been a lot in the news lately, actually, with the insurance reforms that are being pushed and the special session that's coming up next week up in Tallahassee to try to see what we can do to reform the law and kind of curb the litigation abuse that we have.
Listen, I know what you're talking about. I've seen it firsthand here.
Yes, I'm sure you've seen it with insurance premiums going up and everything like that, and especially down in South Florida.
Oh, yeah. So, but a lot of insurance carriers are pulling out of the state, right? So how are we going to fix that?
You know, the biggest driver of all of this is the statutory fees. So if a lawsuit is filed by an insured, basically there's a law in place that allows for one-way fee statute. So if the insurer prevails and recovers even a dollar from the carrier, then the carrier is responsible for paying 100% of the insured's attorney's fees, as well as their own lawyer's fees. And so you see a ton, basically the way the law is in Florida right now, it incentivizes litigation because of the one-way fee statute. So that is the biggest thing that needs to be addressed next week at the special session.
Do you think that will get resolved and changed?
I don't know, we'll see. I mean, a few years ago, it wouldn't have even been on the table to be discussed, but I think in the last year, 18 months, where we're seeing just this absolute crisis where I think six carriers just this year went insolvent in Florida. And a lot of people are pulling out, scaling back, just refusing to write business in Florida, which has made Citizens, which is supposed to be the carrier of last resort, now is the biggest carrier in Florida. So something's got to give.
So what happens in the event that insurance becomes unavailable? I mean, what happens to the consumer?
Well, I mean, that's exactly that's the problem right now, is the consumer has very little choice. And so you're left with trying to get a policy with Citizens, but not everyone may qualify for Citizens, unfortunately. If your home is valued after, I think it's more than $700,000, then you don't qualify for Citizens. And so then you have to go to Surplus Lines or try to explore what other options there may be. And right now there just really aren't a whole lot of options.
So in the event like of the event in Southwest Florida, where a lot of people were not covered, what happens there?
I think that's one of the things that, you know, the legislature is now finally starting to see how pervasive and I guess just how significant this problem is.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people they're not fully insured. They didn't have adequate flood insurance. And I think the message needs to be that you're not fully insured unless you have flood insurance.
Right.
And unfortunately, you know, they have FEMA there to try to help a bit, but the situation right now is, you know, they need to be doing more to educate the public as to what insurance you really do need in order to be fully protected. And also to curb the litigation abuse that is the result of, you know, unscrupulous contractors, roofers, public adjusters who go in and take advantage of people in their time of need and vulnerability and get them to sign up for all these things that they don't need and don't end up benefiting them and it's all driven again by the fees and the money.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. So how'd you find yourself in this area of law? Like, how'd you get there?
By accident, really. It was just when I graduated from law school, it was 2011. And we were still in that recession from, you know, 2008, still feeling the effects of that. And I just ended up at a firm where they did a lot of insurance work. And I got into this. And at that point, we were doing a lot of sinkhole litigation. And it was interesting because you could get out and you could start taking depositions right away. I was going to hearings right away. And so it just gave me a lot of practice doing real litigation work. And at this point now, it's something that I think has also given me a lot of practical knowledge as a homeowner that I would not otherwise have had about, you know, building materials, the cost of those things, what you really need for your home. And so I enjoy just also personally just having that practical knowledge.
Yeah. So this is totally personal, totally off. But now that you mentioned it, I mean, what do you need as a property owner? I mean, how much do you need to insure? Do you need to insure the full replacement cost?
I mean, ideally, you would want to be fully protected in the event of, you know, some catastrophic fire loss or, you know, hurricane windstorm loss so that way you're not stuck in a situation where you have a home that's essentially unlivable and one that you can't repair.
Everything comes down to sort of risk management, right? Like, what are the chances of that? If you live on the water, yes. But if you live inland, I mean, what are the chances of like your house being leveled completely?
And you're right. It's a risk assessment thing. And it's something that I think, you can talk about with your agent too, to see what packages make sense. What policy endorsements you'd like to include or what you're willing to take a risk on and say, listen, I don't live in a flood zone and I just don't see that happening for me. So I'm not going to, you know, spring for that extra coverage. It's really just something that depends completely on where you are in the state and what, you know, you might be prone to.
Yeah. Anyway, off tangent, sorry for that. But, and again, I saw on your back when we chatted about, so you have dual citizenship from Spain. So where were you born? Were you born in Spain?
No, so I was born actually in Newark, New Jersey.
Okay.
My mom is from Spain and my dad is Cuban. And so my dad, he fled Cuba when he was 6 years old with his mom and his sister, grew up in Jersey City. And then when he went to medical school, he went to medical school in Spain. And that's where he met my mom. And then after medical school, they moved back to the States for his residency.
Oh, I see. So you gained citizenship from spending time in Spain.
Through my mom, yeah. The way the laws work in Spain is that you don't have to be born there in order to become a citizen. It can actually be passed down. So she was able to pass it down through me. I was able to pass it down to my kids just based on having a parent who is a citizen.
Ah, interesting. Very interesting. Okay. And why'd you decide to become an attorney? When did you make that decision? Yeah.
That's a good question. I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, my parents were immigrants. My dad fled Cuba during, you know, the Castro regime takeover. And before, you know, the Cuban Revolution, my grandfather, he had been an orthodontist in Cuba. He had been a senator in Cuba in the prior administration. My grandmother was a pharmacist and a concert pianist. And overnight, when Castro took over, they lost everything. Yeah. My grandfather died, and my grandmother was suddenly a young widow and single mom, and she fled the country with her two kids and had to completely start over. And growing up, my parents would always say, you know, your life can change in an instant. You can lose everything. They could take everything away from you, but the one thing that no one can ever take away from you is your education. And so they always instilled in my brother and me this idea that you need to be independent, self-sufficient. You need to be in a profession where you don't depend on someone to give you a job. You can create your own work. And so it's just something that just made sense because I excelled in, you know, reading, writing, advocacy, and those things. And I just went ahead with that path.
Interesting. That's quite a story. Do you have any family in Cuba still?
Yeah.
You do?
I still have some cousins, some distant relatives in Cuba, but for the most part, a lot of my immediate family and, you know, closer cousins and relatives, they were all able to.
They left. Mm-hmm. So how are things there now? Is it changing for the better or is it?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I know about 6 months or a year ago, there was, you know, the people had attempted to kind of rise up and protest the conditions. And, you know, I'm sure that you kind of probably saw that in the news.
Sure.
And there seemed to be kind of a glimmer of hope there for a minute. But, you know, I think it's still, unfortunately, pretty, pretty bad there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah. We still can travel there, though, right? From the United States, I think.
Yeah, I haven't been, but I'd love to.
All right. Good. In the work you do, do you do trials? Do you have jury trials?
We do. It's just a lot of times we just don't even get there. We just end up, the case ends up either settling or we win on motion practice or there's voluntary dismissal. So I've had so many cases that were just right there, ready to go. And then the plaintiff will dismiss the day before or settle at the courthouse steps. So, but absolutely. Yeah, we go to trial. My firm goes to trial all the time. My other partners are in trial regularly.
Oh, okay. Have you been yet yourself?
I have not. I've been right there.
All right. Are you looking forward to that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, good. So how do you guys prepare for that? What do you use to get ready?
So, I mean, in our work, a lot of it is, it's all based on policy interpretation and it's a contractual dispute at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to what the policy's coverages are. And so there are various different motions you can file depending on the facts. And so I always try to, whenever possible, if I can find a way to end the case through motion practice, summary judgment, things of that nature, that's always my goal to try to set it up that way. And then if a case needs to settle, then it's also my responsibility to tell the client early on. And I have no problem telling them, listen, this isn't one that we want to fight all the way. Here's why, here are the weaknesses, here's what we need to take into account. And so, you know, you got to identify those cases early so you don't spend a year litigating and then say, oh, wait, this isn't a good case after all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what's the most exposure that a client could have?
Well, there's the policy limits, you know, govern. So if you have a total loss and you have your policy limits that come into play, but then also the way the law currently is set up, there's the fees, there's the attorney fees.
Okay.
And so that gets, you know, just completely exponentially greater in terms of exposure because you're dealing with the other side's attorney's fees as well as your own attorney's fees, plus the possibility of, you know, potential bad faith lawsuit down the road if that gets filed due to an expired civil remedy notice. So the exposure can be significant, and it really has very little to do with the actual policy itself, which is the problem.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So there's real money at stake, and you need to make sure that you're going to, if you have to go to trial, you're going to win. Right. So you got to prepare yourself.
Right.
Do you do focus groups? Do you guys use those or mock trials?
I know that we have before. I don't know about my firm now having done that. I know that, you know, my main partner, Andy Bolin, the managing partner, he's been to trial dozens and dozens of times in his line of work. So really, whenever I do need to go to trial, I just pick his brain. I have another partner who's gone to trial regularly as well, Trina Hearn. And she's kind of stepped in and helped me on some cases that when we're gearing up for trials. So I've got a lot of resources just even within my own firm.
Got it. What do you think about the defense side versus the plaintiff side? I mean, now that you're on the, you're on the defense side, but do you ever wonder what it would be like to be on the other side?
Oh yeah. I've been a defense lawyer my whole life and that's just the best fit for me. But I have thought about it, of course. And I think any lawyer who's, you know, your job is to try to, of course, advocate for your client zealously, but you want to think about the case from how's the plaintiff lawyer looking at it.
Right.
And so you have to consider what, you know, how are they viewing this? What are they going to try to play up, or, you know, what facts are they going to use to their advantage? So I think you're really not fully doing your job if you're not thinking about what the other side is doing.
Yeah. When you say you think it's the best fit on the defense side, why? What is it about the defense side?
I like my corporate clients. They are sophisticated. They know how the lawsuit process works. They, you know, they're very familiar with everything. Whereas I think if I were representing individuals, you know, you'd have to explain in every single case what interrogatories are, or having to deal with people who may not understand the ins and outs of it as much. And not to say that I wouldn't, you know, do whatever needed to be done to you know, make them feel like they had an understanding of everything. But I think it's just the ease and comfort of, you know, knowing my clients, their perspectives, the fact that they are very familiar with this process, and I work with the same people regularly, and I'm friends with them. So I just enjoy my relationships with my clients.
Got it. Okay. So you're a relationship person.
Yeah.
So you tend to get the same insurance carrier that you do business for on retainer?
Yeah. So we have a couple of clients, and it's a volume business. The first party property world, it's very much a volume based business. And so you get hopefully a lot of work from, you know, regular clients, and then so that you start working with the same litigation adjusters, you get familiar with the managers, and so, you know, you work with a lot of the same people.
Yeah. Has AI crept into that business yet?
Oh yeah. And it's good. You know, I think, you know, technology has been really helpful. I remember when I first started practicing, it was still like the claim files would arrive in the mail.
Right.
You get like this huge stack of like hundreds of pages of a claim file. And now everything is digital. And it's been that way for years. And it's crept into a lot of different sides of it.
Yeah. And decision-making, I mean, like, give me an example of how it's being applied.
Well, I mean, just technology overall in the law. I mean,
no, I mean, AI. I'm curious about AI. Yeah.
Oh, AI. So there's, you know, all these like platforms and softwares that, you know, that clients use, and to basically as a portal to communicate with their counsel. It also has a lot of, it tracks certain data about, the cases, and, it basically is, I think, used to try to calculate risk. And there's just a lot of different ways that technology is being used to try to kind of facilitate things and to kind of get more information and data.
Yeah. And you're a proponent of that?
I am.
Oh, good.
I mean, just even, you know, AI aside, you know, just technology in general has made our lives so much easier and better, I think, in the last couple of years. Whereas 2-3 years ago, I would be regularly driving to Gainesville, St. Pete, Miami for just 5-minute hearings or for a deposition, and you spend all day on the road. And now everything is, for the most part, virtual. So you've just gotten so much time back. And it hasn't negatively impacted the way, you know, things can be done. I think everyone was able to see that you can absolutely have a very productive mediation, a great depo. You know, it's not interfering in a negative way with your ability to, you know, to just practice.
Yeah, good. Excellent. So you guys did fine through the whole COVID thing.
Yeah, we were lucky because my firm was already very remote friendly before COVID. Everything is on a cloud-based system at our firm. And so that was one of the huge things that actually I really liked about my firm is that they were a huge proponent of remote work and everything like that, even before COVID. So then when COVID hit, we didn't have to change any platforms. We have to change anything the way the firm was running because it was already set up to be remote from the beginning.
Excellent. Good deal. Is there any one case that stands out that was memorable, interesting that you work on?
That's a good question. I guess just this week, I mean, I've had a couple of good, you know, cases this year, but on Monday this week I had a fee hearing in which my client was awarded every last penny of the fees and costs we had incurred in the defense of the lawsuit as a prevailing party. This was a case that we had litigated for 2 years. We had everything set up for trial. We had had our motion for summary judgment granted, our Daubert motion. We had stricken their expert, their damages evidence. And so 2 days before the date certain trial, the plaintiff dismissed. And so we went ahead and tried to pursue our fees based on an expired proposal for settlement and as a prevailing party. And finally, Monday was the hearing for that. And we got all of our fees awarded to us. So that was vindicating because, again, we had just been in this slog for 2 years with this case. So, you know, Pat, those are always, you know, great outcomes to be able to report to your client.
Yeah.
And then I guess in terms of like most memorable case, when I was a young lawyer, I was maybe a second, third year lawyer. I was brought in to help on this very complex land use development case involving Martin County, South Florida Water Management District, land developer called Lake Point. And my firm had been retained to represent Maggie Herchala, who was Janet Reno's sister.
Okay.
And so I worked on that case for about 18 months. That case dragged on for years, like after I'd left the firm and all of that. But I learned a tremendous amount because the lawyers all around were just phenomenal lawyers for, you know, lawyers from Martin County, the Water Management District, Lake Point. Like I just learned so much just from seeing them and just having the opportunity to work on such an interesting case. And also with, you know, Ms. Herchala, who was a huge environmentalist and dedicated her life to conservation efforts in the Everglades. So it was, that's definitely one of the most memorable ones.
Oh, cool. Interesting. Yeah. The Everglades, how are we doing with it? Are we taking good care of it?
I mean, I'm not the expert of it, but I gotta say that I'm sure, you know, yeah, we definitely need to be doing everything we can to protect the Everglades. It's just the most, such a unique place with so much biodiversity. And it's just an incredible treasure that Florida has.
Yeah, exactly. I can remember my son like going through there, like on a, like a wave runner with his buddies going through there. So destroying it personally, right?
Oh man.
As all the housing is butting up against, right?
Especially
in South Florida, yeah. So yeah, we like to invade this land, right? Yeah. Jeez. So just to sort of to wind it down here a little bit, what do you think makes you or a good defense attorney successful? What are the traits you have to have?
Aptitude, initiative, and attention to detail. To me, the most important attributes are aptitude and initiative. And whenever I'm interviewing an associate, those are the two things I'm looking for, because I can teach you the law, I can teach you oral advocacy, written advocacy, client relationships, all that stuff. But what I can't teach someone is how to care and how to be motivated. Right. So to me, those are the most important traits.
How do you see that in somebody? How do you, because in an interview, right? I mean, listen, a lot of times that's like the best sale and the last sale they make, right? You never know until they're actually working.
You're 100% right about that. It's very hard to tell in an interview, because anyone can put on a good show for 30 minutes, right?
Yep.
But you can tell if someone's a quick study, I think. And I can tell within a few weeks of, you know, if someone, if I bring someone on, you know, if they're going to work, because, you know, aptitude to me is just being able to, you know, show an interest in what you're doing and learn the area of law and kind of dive in and show that, you know, you get the concepts and you understand and, you know, you're pushing your files and picking up on the issues. And initiative is just someone who's hungry, who's motivated, who's looking to do whatever they can to show their value and to, you know, get the best outcome they can for their clients. You know, my partners make fun of me because I can tell pretty quickly, I think, when an associate is or is not going to work out. And I'm not afraid to let someone go, because I think you can tell aptitude and initiative quickly. You can tell if someone cares. You can tell if someone is showing up ready to learn and to grow and to ask questions and to, you know, see what they can do to contribute to the team. And aptitude, I think you can tell quickly too, just based on the work product that you're getting. You know, I don't expect it to be perfect, and I know you're not going to get everything on the first try if you're learning this practice area, but aptitude, I think, you know, can be shown relatively quickly just by the questions they're asking and the issues that they're pointing out to you.
Yeah. Do you do like cognitive reasoning testing before somebody comes in?
No.
I mean, a lot of places
I'm sure that would be hugely beneficial. I know a lot of companies do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff now where you can actually test, right? You know, take yourself out of the equation, like have these real objective screening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've been through them. I've used them many times, and they're really effective. I mean, you don't rely on it completely, but it's another data point to help.
Is it like the Myers-Briggs tests and things? Not
Myers-Briggs is more of a personality thing. Yeah. There's a bunch of them out there that you can use that sort of profile people. I mean, some of them I remember I did one not long ago for something. And it was like, you know, it was almost like an IQ test where, you know, figure out this pattern of shapes and stuff. It's like, oh my God. I mean, I'm too old. I couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah, I don't think I could either. I can't even do my second grader's math homework, really. I mean, he's already beyond me in that point. So,
right. New math. No, it is funny. I mean, I've seen some stuff. It's like, not just my kids, but other people's just like, oh my, I mean, I graduated with an engineering degree. I mean, this looks like a foreign language. I have no idea.
Yeah.
What this is. Same. Right?
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
So I sometimes wonder about my intellectual capacity there. I mean, I don't know. Some might have changed.
Yeah, I agree. These kids, what they're doing these days, it's remarkable. So that's why I just kick it over to my husband. I'm like, well, you're on math duty. So.
There you go. what's your husband do for a living?
So he's actually a plaintiff attorney.
Ah, there you go. You must have great fights in your house.
I know, right? No one can win a fight in our house. No, I'm joking. So he does like premises and like bodily injury stuff. So we don't really intersect anymore on that. But it's actually really good, because for a long time we were opposite sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
And I loved hearing his perspective on things. I would run facts by him and just see like, hey, as a plaintiff lawyer, how would you be looking at this? And he would do the same with me on some of his cases, you know, just kind of hypothetically, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And it also worked out because, you know, he left my clients alone. So I didn't have to worry about
having to draw that a case. That actually is quite interesting to get both sides of it. I would think that'd be super helpful.
It was. It really was.
Very good. Well, listen, this has been really interesting. What do you want to leave with the audience? Just sort of wrap it up about your firm and you and best way to connect.
Sure. Well, again, thank you for having me. This was really fun. My firm is the Bolin Law Group. Our firm specializes in representing, you know, homeowners insurance carriers, commercial carriers. We do construction defect work, medical malpractice, and just general liability work. So we really are essentially full service civil litigation firm. And if, you know, my partner, Caitlin Ferry, and I, we head up the first party property division of our firm, and we practice throughout the state. We've got offices in our main offices in Tampa, St. Pete. I helped them open the Orlando office about 3.5 years ago and manage that. We're in Melbourne, Jacksonville, Boca, and most recently Tallahassee. So, so if there's anything, you know, anyone, you know, or would like to talk to me about, legal related or not, you can certainly find my contact information on our website, which is bolinlaw.com.
Excellent. Good. All right. Excellent. Good stuff. Well, for everybody, again, Christina Cambo from Bolin Law Group. And this is sponsored by Emotion Track, which is a legal tech platform that helps litigators prepare for mediation and trials. Thank you very much, Christina. It was really fun.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I appreciate it.
You bet.